Oh, hello.
Hello. Welcome to a special, super fun, topic-specific episode of Defend Your Ship. What up? Raina, what are we talking about today? Raina, come closer to the mic. Get your face right there in that mic.
What aren't we talking about?
Well, I feel like the best way to describe it is the things that fanfic can explore versus what you can explore in mainstream media.
So fan space versus meat space.
Yes. So, like, because we live in a majority heterosexual, cisgendered, white-leaning world, you aren't necessarily allowed to explore things in mainstream media that you are free to explore in fan fiction, such as certain characters being queer, certain characters being trans, certain characters being different races, certain characters being polyamorous.
Characters going outside of societal taboos.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I guess we wanted to talk about that and explore it.
Yeah. So with us today, we have me. I am Stevie, also known as Sonic Kitty on Tumblr, where I still am for some reason. And we have Raina.
Also just known as Raina. I guess Raina Sinclair.
Yes, burlesque my performer last extraordinaire. And we also have with us Emily.
What Yay! Up, kids? Hello.
You may remember Emily from our fabulous episode about Hannibal and cannibalism and
all those good boys.
Blood in the butt cracks.
You can find me on Twitter at Emmy Blake.
Nice.
Yeah. Come talk to me about, like, really, really obscure ships. I always want to know about people's, like, hella obscure stuff.
Ooh, yes, that would also be a good episode for us. So if you find them, send those people our way.
Listen, I have a lot of feelings about a lot of things.
We could also just do an obscure ship episode sometime. All right, good to know. But today, we're talking about all of the things that we go back to fanfic for because real life isn't doing a good enough job. That's great. Do you want to give us our first question, kick things off?
Well, should we talk about what we like that we feel is obscure in mainstream media?
Yeah, let's do that. So, yeah, we'll go around and we'll each say our favorite thing to find in fanfic because we can't find it from anywhere else.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, go ahead and start.
I feel like mine's obvious. But
is it perhaps like multiple people being in like a romantic sexual relationship with all of each other, like in a poly, like in an amorous way?
But not even necessarily necessarily in romantic relationships with each other, but I guess like in, like, I also accept V's.
Yeah.
Okay. Like,
alternative intimacy formations?
Yes. Ooh. I guess that's, yes. I like the idea of like...
AIF.
I motherfucking hate love triangles. I hate the love triangle trope with a burning passion because I feel like it's so outdated. Mm-hmm. And like, it's basically society just saying like, you're a slut if you love more than one person.
Mm-hmm. It also tends to rob at least one person in that triangle of agency.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Like, one person ends up being, like, either the prize or, like, the person left on the sidelines who never had any control to begin with or any ability to, you know, like, let's go back to a classic shitty love triangle. Edward, Bella, and Jacob. Jacob never had shit. He had to basically, like, force her into a kiss, and it was terrible and awful. So she lost agency, he had never had any agency to begin with, and Edward's a creep.
And then didn't he, like, you find that out that he was in love with the not-fetus?
Okay.
That's not the worst thing. Listen. That's not even the worst thing that series did. I'm actually, like, okay with that.
You're okay. I'm not. Oh, boy. I mean, like, look. Okay, no. I'm just, like, I'm trying to think of what's worse than Jacob falling in love with a baby. Like, what do they do
that's the thing. The baby doesn't even exist yet.
This episode was going to be about a thing, but I always knew this was exactly what was going to fucking happen.
Well, so, okay, we're getting off topic, but, like, basically...
No, don't let Stevie get away with this. What's worse than falling in love with a baby?
But, like, that's the thing. The baby doesn't even exist yet. Okay. It's not even a fetus. It's just an idea that he then is like, oh, well, I wasn't actually in love with you. I was in love with your unborn child. That wasn't even conceived yet.
The whole time I was attracted to you because I knew you had this specific egg in you.
Okay, so that's, you're all right. That's creepy as fuck. But on the other hand, it's basic, that's basically like that's psychological horror, okay? So all right, here's mine. Here's what I like to get out of fan fiction that real media doesn't necessarily give me. I swear to God this is related and I will account for myself.
You don't have to. This is a safe space for all of our garbage. Do it.
This is defend your ship. I'm going to defend myself. All right. I like romance as horror.
Yes.
Like I like romance as psychological horror, as body horror, because to me there's always been something like sex was very taboo when I was growing up, and so romance was as well, because romance and sex were like intrinsically linked and kind of the same thing. And it was like only okay within the bounds of marriage. Like if you ran fast enough and you made it to marriage, you were safe. Like baseball.
Oh my God.
Right, and if you get hit with a ball too fast and you lose your virginity, you're out.
Gross.
That whole gum thing.
Gross. Yeah. All that spitting and butt padding.
I'm so sorry for that metaphor. I'm really.
Don't you apologize for that?
Yeah, I got it.
Someone's writing RPF baseball fic somewhere.
Oh. No, that's completely true. Yeah, I think there's the baseball anime, so it's almost definitely
There's so many baseball animes.
Well, there you go.
Really? Sports anime is a whole huge thing.
Yeah, everybody's getting hit with balls.
Again, hate sports, love sports anime.
I'm really excited for when this podcast gets a sponsor.
I don't think we're ever getting a sponsor.
How's that gonna
honestly,
go?
Honestly, like, I would just sponsor other weird fan people. I would just be like, hey, if you want us to promo your weird fan shit, we'll do that because that's all we're good for. So, that's what I like, is like, recognizing that I've always felt that like romance and sex, it was like this thing that could completely change you as a person, like change your mind, change your body. My mom told me that when you have sex with people you're not married to, if you're having sex with multiple people, every time you have sex, you leave a little bit of your soul with them.
Oh,
and
my
you
God.
And you get a little bit of their soul. So basically sex creates horcruxes is how I was raised.
I wonder how your mom would feel about arrow people.
She doesn't know.
I'm so sorry. I do have to stop and just say horcruxes.
Hey. Love that.
That's
Thank
the you. Name of my new band.
Yes.
Oh my God. What? Okay, that's your Harry Potter burlesque show right there.
Horcruxes.
The horcruxes.
Very good. I like that.
Oh, sorry, one pause. I think we're spiking a little bit. Raina, I think you might be spiking. I'm just going to like scooch.
Oh yeah, let's adjust this little mic situation.
Sorry.
No,
all fine. Good. Thank you for being audio conscious.
Well,
so yeah, so that's my thing. So in terms of being in love with a fetus, to me, that is just, that is ripe for horror. Like, how horrifying would it be to realize that your soul was like linked to something that did not even exist? Like, that's terrifying. Like, Jacob's like soul bonded to an egg and like has physical manifestations of that before he's even aware of it. How terrifying is it? It's just terrifying to think that your brain can have implications on your body without you knowing.
That's
about.
Why Love I it. Kind of am weirded yeah. out by soulmate AUs.
Exactly. Those are all horror stories to me, and I dig it. But to me, it's
like,
horror.
Some of them are okay, but like at the same time, like. Well, I think it's interesting where people take the soulmate AU and going back to the polyamory thing, being like you can have more than one soulmate or you can have platonic soulmates, because I feel like the traditional soulmate AU is like there is one person for you and if you never find that person, you're fucked.
Right, and see, I love that because it's horrifying.
And so,
or they could be your worst enemy, or you just watch them, like, kill your wife or whatever, and you're like, well, shit.
And, or even if you do find them and they, like, die or, like, something else happens, then it's like, oh, well, you can't be happy ever again. And it's like, no, that's bullshit to me.
Yeah.
Yes, it is bullshit in real life, but it's real fun to read about. for some of us.
I mean, fair. Yeah, for some of us. I guess I'm just, again, it goes back to my idea of, like, putting people in boxes and being like, you can only be this one thing, and if you don't fit in this box, then, like, yeah, there's something wrong with you.
Right, like, that's, to me, that's a horror story. And I think I like to, like, expunge that horror in fan fiction.
And that I would say also, like, one of the things that I really enjoy about some of those, like, the ones that are really good, like, the Soulmate AUs, or, like, if we're gonna go there, like, the ABO fic.
Oh, oh my god.
Wait, let me finish what I'm saying.
I have no grounds to judge you on that.
No. Let me just, what I'm saying is that those universes, when they're well done, set up societal norms and societal expectations in their own way, which are, you know, metaphors for the societal expectations we have on ourselves in our own lives. And the good ones use that world building to explore people who do or in some way decide to break out of those norms.
Fucking so, favorites. Get me two alphas going together. That's my chance. Yes.
So, you know, for a Soulmate AU, like, part of it is, you know, if the universe is telling that your soulmate is someone who you, by all rights, should never want to see ever in your life, or someone who you don't believe that you could ever get along with, even, like, that's interesting, because, you know, you'd think that your soulmate would be somebody who makes you happy. Or, you know, like, yeah, in, like, ABO stuff, like, when the world is being so biologically prescriptivist,
mm-hmm.
like, to the point where there are literally two sets of genders for you to have to conform to, like, how do you as a person navigate that when that's not how you feel inside? Mm-hmm. Or, like, one of my favorite unsung, like, underappreciated, undersung, weird AUs that only exist in fan fiction, those, like, dom sub AUs where everyone has, like, a biological imperative to be either, like, a sexual dominant or a sexual submissive. I'm fucking obsessed with those. They're so fun.
I found one of those for the first time. I've never heard about this until I found it in a Ladybug AU, and it made me so upset.
They are my favorite shit, because they are so perfectly fanfic. Because it's like,
well,
yeah, just everything's just like a BDSM world, and it's part of your brain chemistry. Don't worry about it.
It wasn't even just that you're either a dom or a sub, or I guess they had a brief mention of a switch, but there was nothing.
Oh no, switches are like secondary characters who they don't need to deal with. Lestrade's a switch. You know? It's like that shit.
Not a division.
But there was also, like, an aspect of it where it was like, oh, well, there's the dom voice where you can get somebody to obey you by using the dom. And I was like, I hate this.
Wait, Stevie, is this new to you?
No. It's not.
Your jaw-dropping is...
Okay, dom voice is new to me. That's
oh, no, that's like a thing in these...
I hate it.
Dom de la Weez?
The voice is like, hey, everybody.
As somebody who is actually into BDSM, I hate it.
No.
I hate it.
Listen, it's absolute garbage, but it's like I think it's so fun because it's so indulgent.
Speaking of garbage and indulgence.
But I also feel like, maybe this is just me, but I feel like it's one of those things where it's like people who have never actually done BDSM being like, oh, it's so kinky and cool.
Oh.
And then being like, this is my fantasy version of BDSM.
That's so funny, because, like, I always thought of it as people who actually did have some experience with it and were exploring sort of, like, the sci-fi version of it. Like,
I mean, to be fair, I only read one, so okay.
In the Mysterious Ladybug fandom, I'm just going to go out on a limb and assume that that author was not a seasoned... BDSM.
Well, yeah, and again,
you and I are going to have a conversation about some other AUs I can send your way. Some X-Men shit.
And again, this is one of those things where it's like, oh, Marinette has to be a sub and Adrian has to be a dom.
Oh,
and
no.
And it was like, okay. No.
So what we're going to do is I'm going to introduce you to the X-Men cadre of these fics. Where it's Charles and Eric, and it's delightful.
Oh, we actually have
come
somebody...
with me.
You know, we have somebody who's going to come on.
I was a Professor X and Magneto shipper specifically for X-Men First Class.
Yeah, of course, because the
movie's
about a divorce.
And we have someone coming on the podcast later to talk about that exact pairing. So you should send us those our way, and then we can ask our next guest. We can just completely Surprise! You want to talk about BDSM here?
Yeah.
So speaking of trash and indulgence,
thank you for keeping us on track.
Would you say that that fits into what you seek out in fic that you don't get in mainstream media?
I think partially yes, because for many, many reasons, I do really enjoy like exploring the really dark, weird stuff, and it's harder to find that in mainstream media done with any sense of like intersectional feminist awareness or responsibility to the reader or awareness of how that could affect someone who's like a woman or a trauma survivor or whatever the reader may have to deal with in their own life. And I think I've found that fan fiction communities, because they are communities, because they're much more communicative, tend to have better ideas of how to take care of each other while exploring this stuff. So I think that's a big part of it for me, is that like these are communities where the fact that these things could affect someone badly or could hurt someone or could be done poorly, that there's an awareness of that. So like it might be the exact same content as you would find in some piece of mainstream media, but I trust the content creators and their intentions on the whole much more. So it's there's a better safety net. And there's a lot more like warnings and that kind of thing.
Yes, the warnings. I love that you get warnings in fanfiction, because I know that when it comes to mainstream media, there are complaints about content warnings, you know, ruining the intention of the art. And I don't think that that's the case at all. I think that content warnings can be extremely useful and in fact allow you to do even more exploration.
It gives you an ability to explore. It gives you the confidence to explore.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also, like, I mean, I guess this goes back to, like, our conversation we had earlier, but, like, I feel like content warnings aren't the same thing as spoilers, where it's like, hey, content warning, there might be blood in this, or there might be heavy BDSM in this, or, like, this might be my kink, but it's not your kink, and that's okay. You can turn back. Like,
yeah, it establishes a ground for informed consent.
Yes.
Because somebody can say, yes, I want to experience this, and they can understand what they're getting into, instead of just like going in blind. You know, like the way that I went in to go see Pineapple Express, not knowing it was a movie about pot. You just don't want to do
you
that.
Did it. You did it.
Hold on.
I'm sorry. What?
Stevie, I feel like you're just like, you're really dunking on yourself right now. No offense, I support you and I love you, but like you have, that was a self burn of the highest order. I mean,
what?
See, I just save little nuggets of fact like that for when my friends aren't expecting it.
You didn't know it was about stoners?
Right, in my defense, I was like 17,
you
and
are
I was
valid.
I
you
was
are
going
supportive.
To see it with an older friend who should have known, and because she didn't say anything, I didn't know. And we went in to see it. She had no idea either, in my defense, and she was much older than me.
Why? How did you?
Did you not even read a synopsis?
Nope. Like, I did not even read a synopsis. I had not seen any of the trailers.
Why did you go to it then?
We didn't have anything else to do, and we lived in the suburbs.
I can't.
Well,
I can't take it out.
Imagine how much better my life would have been if there was a content warning that was like, hey, this is about weed. You don't have to spend your day doing this. Although I did get to see those cool, like, cross joints that apparently...
Yes. I've never seen this movie.
Seth Rogen knows how to make a joint within a joint.
He makes
so you
it
know
look
how,
like, a
like a cross looks like?
Yeah.
He literally, like, makes one joint and then puts the other joint.
And he made all of those
it.
Himself. He actually knows how to make them. And I believe, if I'm remembering correctly from Breakfast, Lunch, and Dinner, Snoop Dogg enjoys his joints.
Yes.
And Snoop Dogg would know, because Snoop Dogg has his own guy to roll his joints, and you thought you were the one who was going to get us off topic.
All right, back on the rails, people.
What is this podcast even about?
Who knows anymore?
No one knows. So I would say, one, the safety to explore and sort of this ability to, like, you know, get weird with it. But also I would say just... like, as somebody who, like, was an English major in college and loves, like, analyzing story and narrative and stuff, one of the things that's so frustrating about mainstream media is that it's only one story.
Yes.
Whether or not that story is good, it's just that one.
Yes.
So all of these other potential, like, offshoots and themes that were touched on maybe and weren't explored, like, even for something that's really, really well done. You know, there's, like, all these alternate versions of it that, because it's a movie or a TV show, will never exist. So the opportunity to explore the alternate versions of a story in big ways or in little ways, and the opportunity to paint those stories with a wider palette that includes things like, you know, different kinds of world building and, I don't know, sex and queerness and...
And also happy relationships.
Happy relationships, actual conversations about real shit that in a movie might kind of be boring, but in a fic...
Oh, well, like, and also, like, I feel like, regardless... Well, one of the things that I love about certain polyamory fics is, like, you actually get to see people being happy in polyamorous relationships. Mm-hmm. And it isn't this thing where it's, like, it's all going to crash and burn and nobody can be happy. Or alternatively, even outside of polyamorous fics, where it's, like, you can still be in a healthy relationship and still make the story interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like so many... Sorry.
No. Continue.
I feel like so many stories are all about how these characters get together, but you never actually get to see them in an actual relationship because people see, oh, well, you actually being in a relationship is boring. Like, one of the things that really, really bugged me about the new Veronica Mars season is that the writer believes that Veronica is boring if she's in a happy relationship and somehow still can't solve murders and solve crimes.
Well, you can't solve crimes if you're also getting it on the reg.
Like,
duh.
It's like,
yeah, I'm so sorry. That was terrible.
It takes a tortured soul to solve crime.
Exactly. It's like, well,
you can't get hugged and solve crime.
Yeah, haven't you seen Hannibal?
Wouldn't it be healthier? Wouldn't it be healthier to, like, have a world outside of your job where, like, you can still solve crimes and be a detective and do all that great stuff, but you can also have a supportive relationship where you can, like, have somebody who supports your career or have somebody that's willing to help you with your career or just have a break from that career.
Raina, no, that's too kinky.
I have feelings.
Open communication and support is my kink.
I know.
R rating, NC-17.
That's why we made the joke. The ultimate pairing of Buffy is Buffy in therapy because she's never going to get it.
Yep.
Sorry.
Because she's never going to get it.
She's never going to get it.
No, she's never going to get it. What's that thing? She's like, I'm cookies. I'm not done cooking. That part. And you're like, girl, just get out of the oven and find a supportive relationship. Anyway, no, and I think also as well, like, because fan fiction is largely, in my view, I mean, obviously not everyone feels this way, but it's largely about exploration of various kinds, because it's never going to be, like, the definitive whatever. It's all about trying things and exploration and growing and changing. And so you can have a fic that is just about those little moments that wouldn't necessarily read in a movie or a TV show with limited budget and time. You can have a fic that's about navigating those little nuances of a happy relationship that are really interesting, but not necessarily
a main story.
Yeah. Or wouldn't necessarily read as well or need that sort of, like, background and basis that you have when you're dealing with existing characters where you're like, I don't need to establish anything about these people. You already know who Steve and Bucky are. Mm-hmm. Let's have them have, like, a 40,000 word kink negotiation because you know the basics. So, like, let's get into the nitty gritty and we can do that in this fic because, you know, I don't need to establish it. Yeah. I can just dive deep.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's a really great part of fanfic is everybody comes to the table with a certain understanding of where we're all already at. Mm-hmm. Like, there's almost a certain amount of, like, energy that is not required to get into a fanfic the same way there is for new media. And I think that in that capacity, it can be more accessible. Like, if you're exhausted, if you don't have the spoons to be going and like reading a whole new book or getting into a new TV series, you can keep reading. You can keep experiencing and exploring and looking at new ideas because you're coming to it with these stock characters.
Yes.
That using stock characters has ever been bad in real media for all of time. We all have been doing this.
But it's like, it's a little bit like the difference between going to a new restaurant and and ordering something different off a menu you already know.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Okay, well, I know that I like this diner. I can, there's a base level of acceptability that I know will be reached by ordering from here. And whether it's like I'm getting like a healthy relationship salad or like a trash fire like DubCon burger, like I
like
know
where this metaphor is going.
The ingredients are all the same, and the cooks are the same.
I love the diversity in menu choices that we have here today. Raina being
really
the healthy
do.
Salad,
yeah,
in this capacity, and you being the DubCon burger.
Aww, to be fair,
thank you.
To be fair, I'm only healthy salad to a point. I think it's just that, like,
yeah, no, I would never, I would never suggest that you're the purest one at this table. To be fair, nobody at this table.
That's why we all get along.
I feel like the reason that I like some of those like comfort fix is because so many of the fandoms that I'm in are just filled with so much angst and terrible communication and terrible relationships that you're like, just be happy. Like, yeah. Just get your shit together and be in a healthy relationship.
Happiness is radical.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Because that's, I think, one thing that we're all touching on is different elements of things that are too radical in some capacity for the real world. And mm-hmm. happiness, like, actually is one of those things.
Like, I literally had a therapist tell me once that polyamory is only for old people that are bored with their marriage, so they want something to explore.
Nope.
Yikes
nope,
on
and
bikes.
Nope. And no. And no.
So, the idea of being happy in a polyamorous relationship is still considered a radical act to most people because they assume, well, you have to choose somebody at some point, and it's, like, just that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, fanfic is allowed to exist in extremes. It's allowed to exist in, like, this is a relationship that can and will last forever, you know, and can weather any storm,
yeah.
And has, like, these two people have the tools to do that in a way that, frankly, very few real people actually have the tools to, like, navigate complexities and painful moments. And on the other side, it can be, like, these two people are gonna, like, fucking destroy each other, but let's all watch. Like, so fan fiction's allowed to exist past, like, I guess, what you might think a critic would have an issue with.
Yeah.
Because the critics are not really a part of the equation. You're not trying to get a book deal from this or make money from this. It's solely for the creation and consumption.
Yeah.
So you're allowed to just write 10,000 words of two people snuggling and being happy and, you know, someone patching up someone else's wounds. Or you're allowed to write 10,000 words of, like, someone, I don't know, gaslighting someone else into, like, a weird BDSM scene that they never should have agreed to.
Yeah, or, like, someone slowly realizing that they're in love with a fetus.
We're going to keep coming back to
this. Goddamn episode's really about.
I swear to
is
God.
Is that what we're going to keep coming back to?
I swear to God, I've never read that. I've never wanted to read that, and I never will read that.
I'm sorry.
That.
I have seen all of. All right, no, because here's where I come in as the goddamn
expert.
What
did you do?
I have read every Twilight book, and I have seen every Twilight movie. Fight me.
I mean, like, okay.
I read the first three because I bought them all as one set and then I never did the fourth one.
I can get very emotionally involved, as we've established, very emotionally involved in garbage very quickly. So I was able to really, while I was reading Breaking Dawn, like, be in Breaking Dawn and be furiously turning the pages and, like, oh my God, he's in love with the baby. This follows up on all the imprinting
also
stuff.
Also, don't they have sex and she, like, dies?
Oh, yeah.
Not the baby.
Not the baby.
We have to be so careful about how we use our pronouns.
Bella. Because,
yeah,
the main character, Bella.
I imagine that might kill the baby.
Bella has sex with Edward while conceiving this child, and
I
her
mean,
bones
that
basically
was
break.
No, that's not that, what happens. No, oh, for God's sake, that's not what happens at all. Is this the point in this goddamn podcast where I have to explain to you how Twilight happens?
Maybe.
Okay, we're gonna do this real quick. We're going to do this real quick. And
you
I'm
have
gonna,
a minute.
I'm going to consider this a public service.
Okay, I'll edit in, like, a little, we need, like, a, oh man, you know what we need is little segment theme songs?
Emily explains media no one should have to consume. All right, here's what I'm going to request. At the beginning and end of this section, you put a timestamp so that anyone can skip it if they want to. So come to timestamp if you don't want to listen to this.
It's twilight time.
It's twilight time.
I'm dying.
Okay, all right, I'm going to say this really quickly because honestly, the fifth movie is very, very good and you should watch it.
There are five movies? Okay.
There's the first movie, which is the Twilight book. The second movie, which is New Moon, where Edward breaks up with her because, like...
Oh, yeah, I remember. And there's, like, five pages of blank screen.
Where it's just, like, December, January, February. And she's like, I'm so sad about
it. That was so meaningful when I was reading the book when I was a baby.
Absolutely it was. And so, okay, so there's New Moon, where that's where you meet the amazing evil Italian vampires who are played by Michael Sheen and Christopher Heyerdahl. Yeah, Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen is, like, evil vampire Dumbledore, and it's really fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the third movie... I forget. It's just, it's meaningless and no one gives a shit. And then he proposes to her at the end of that one. And then the fourth book, Breaking Dawn, they split into two movies.
Oh my god, there was not enough content for that.
Listen, there was a lot of content. Whether or not that was good content is debatable. But, so in the fourth movie, they get married and they go on their honeymoon to this island that they own because they're like rich vampires or whatever. And they bang it out real hard.
Yep.
So he doesn't break her bones, because I don't know how you come back from that, because she's still a human. She's like, she's basically like, I want to bone as a human before you turn me into a vampire.
Oh, I remember now. And I remember how she
does. And then he's like, that's an insane thing to say because I'm gonna kill you. But they do fine. She wakes up with a lot of bruises, but she's cool with it, which seems like a really underexplored situation, but fine. In the movie, he grips the headboard so hard he breaks the bed, and that was in the trailer, and I remember that because I was like, holy shit, guys. And then so then she does get pregnant, and the fetus grows really, really quickly because it's a half vampire, half human baby.
Right.
And that's how she breaks her bones.
Yes. Okay, so then she becomes weaker and weaker and weaker because she's a human carrying like a fucking demon child, and it's like has like its embryonic sac is like a vampire skin shell that no one can like get through.
Right, because they do try to not. Edward's like, let's maybe not do this, and she's like, my baby.
And she's like, no, we're gonna keep this. And then she starts having to drink blood because the baby wants blood. And in the movie, they do an amazing job with her like makeup and visual effects because she looks like, emaciated. It's honestly really upsetting.
Oh god.
And Jacob's really upset, and all the werewolves are really upset, and blah 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 blah. And they're like just big dogs yelling at each other. And
oh my god.
So the end of the first movie, which is something that happens in the book, is she basically, like, she's almost due, and she's drinking blood, and she like, trips or something. She, like, literally, like,
what
trips, and her bones are so brittle, and the baby starts coming, and her spine just, like, snaps. And so they get her onto the delivery table, and they're going to try to do a C-section, but nothing they have will cut the sac because it's like vampire skin. So Edward has to bite it open with his teeth.
Oh my god.
No, that's right. Oh my god.
And she dies on the operating table.
And then he turns her into a
vampire. And then they inject her with venom to save her life. And the first movie ends with her opening her vampire eyes.
Oh my god.
The fact that this woman got a book deal blows my mind.
She made a shit ton of money. And the thing is, it's like, it's high melodrama. And
that is the most intense, horrific pregnancy. Like, that makes Battlestar Galactica look tame.
I feel like, also, she's...
He bites it out with his goddamn teeth.
Fucking Stephanie Meyer's a Mormon, isn't she?
Yeah, and there was definitely that, like, pro-life.
Yeah, but they're married, so it's fine.
Hey, I mean, there was definitely like a pro-life element to that. Interviews that I read, she was definitely like trying to get that message across.
It was interesting because that was actually there was like that debate happened in the book,
right?
Basically, because we were they were at a place in the book where like they didn't know whether she would survive this, and it was looking increasingly likely that she would not because she's a human carrying like a fucking demon.
Ironically, they still have to make the choice to kill someone, and they kill the mother.
Yeah.
Ironically. I mean, she's a vampire, but essentially dead.
She does die, yeah. This is why... And then, God, I have to stop talking about this. But this is why I will absolutely defend and encourage people watching the final movie in the series. Because, oh yeah, the first movie also does end with Jacob seeing the baby. Falling to his knees in awe. Because he has found his love and it's this horrible CGI baby.
I hate it. Thanks, I hate it.
But the last movie is about the evil Italian vampires finding out about the baby and coming to try to kill it.
Yeah.
Because vampire children are hugely problematic because they're impossible to control and they end up murdering whole towns of people. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that it's not an actual vampire baby. It's like this weird hybrid. So the whole movie is them amassing their good guy vampire army to fight against the Volturi. And their good guy vampire army includes Rami Malek.
Oh my
Rami
God.
Rami Malek was in this movie?
Yes, he was. And Lee Pace.
What?
That's right.
Yeah. And in the book, no one ever fights. They just basically come together and they talk about it. And then the Volturi are okay, peace out. In the movie, they were smart enough to basically make it a giant vampire X-Men battle that turned out to be a Future Vision. So you have this huge battle scene where people are getting ripped to shreds. And it's awesome because vampires in Twilight are basically made of rock. They're made of marble. They don't bleed. They're just you can hit one and it'll crack. So they are able to get really gnarly with the violence because there's no blood. One of the Italian vampires who's played by Anthony from the Sweeney Todd movie gets the top half of his head ripped off. I think it's Peter Facinelli sticks his hand in this guy's mouth and just pulls the top half of his skull off.
What the hell?
And you're like, Twilight. So I don't know why this is part of the conversation, but I have a lot of love for the last Twilight movie because
we
that.
Got here from bone breaking sex.
Yeah, so TLDR. Yeah. So it wasn't from the sex; it was from the birth. We've all remembered that now.
Yes.
All
right.
This is where you cut, Stevie. This is where you cut.
Okay, we're done talking about Twilight. You can come back.
This is.
Now.
I would recommend you make this a bonus feature that is not part of the episode.
Yes, Emily sets us straight on Twilight.
I'm not proud. Anyway,
I feel like Twilight is okay. I know that we're not talking about Twilight anymore.
We are,
but
though.
We are, because it was completely weird. It was I was reading fan fiction by the time I started reading Twilight, and Twilight felt like fucking fan fiction to me. Like, it didn't feel real. It had that sense of heightened reality, and just this has no bearing on anything real.
Well, I also feel like Twilight, in its own way, is kind of like the most melodramatic fan fiction, which then led its way to 50 Shades of Grey, which was originally a Twilight fan fiction. And kind of the thing that I think wasn't a good thing about 50 Shades, the whole BDSM politics aside, was the fact that people were now I can turn my fan fiction into money. And so people would now basically create fan fiction with the idea of...
with this express purpose.
Of turning it into original content and then, basically deleting their fanfic once they got a book deal.
Yeah, I think this is maybe a good time to segue into, our closing segment, and maybe our topic here can be fan space versus meat space. Why do we keep these things separate? And here's a perfect example of a time when the lines were crossed, specifically with Twilight and 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, that's one of the most frustrating things about those books for me, honestly, is because I think because of the way that, let's say, meat space society works and all of the attendant misogyny and lack of understanding of sexual politics and all this stuff, I don't actually necessarily feel that there's anything inherently wrong with reading and enjoying either one of those works. The problem is that when you take them out of the context in which they are sort of meant to exist, which I would maybe say is more of a fan space, 50 Shades of Grey works really well in a fan space because it exists in context.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it exists in a community and in a world where sort of the way in which fantasy BDSM and the realities of BDSM don't always intersect. And it exists in a world where this is, you're writing this in a different way for a different reason, with a different expectation of your audience's interpretation of it.
It is in dialogue with different works as a fan fiction than it is as a film series and as a book series. Like, fan fiction BDSM is a different world than what we see represented in mainstream media. As we've kind of talked about, mm-hmm. like, fan fiction has the ability to break different boundaries and to include different things. And when you stack up 50 Shades of Grey, the Twilight fan fiction, mm-hmm. against other Twilight fan fictions or against BDSM fan fictions in other fandoms, and BDSM has a history in fandom that I'm not that familiar with, but I do know that it's a trope that goes back as far as fanfic does. So there's a different line of narratives and of character building. There's a different line of work to compare it with. When you take it out of that context, it's now in dialogue with other books, other movies. Mm-hmm. It has to stand up against real world implications.
And it's also, again, these vanilla people seeing this thing and then being like, so this is how BDSM works. Now I'm going to try this and possibly get hurt. Mm-hmm. Because they don't actually do their research and be like, this is how you
to go after BDSM fan content. I feel like if you are going to know to find that, you probably know a little bit about BDSM already, or you've read other fan fictions, because that world is more open.
And I think also, it's the fact that it's more open and that there's context, and also that, how do I put this? When you have not been involved in a fan space or a more sex positive space and you read 50 Shades of Grey, that is potentially your one piece of media interaction with kink. Mm-hmm. That might be like literally the only thing you've seen where kink is explicitly discussed, rather than, you know, just sort of hinted at or whatever. It's the one thing where it's like, I'm a dom. And that's the first time you've read that word or whatever. Rather than if you are in a fan space and you know you have access to more stuff and you know that nothing is going to be the official reality.
Well, and it's also like going back to our discussion about like the dom sub AU thing we were talking about earlier in this podcast.
Remind me, I'm going to send you some shit.
But so like I think some things that vanilla people don't necessarily understand is it's not like, oh, one person is a dom and one person is a sub, and that's just something that exists forever and ever. Like, some people do want 24/7 relationships, but those are negotiated and talked about and worked up to. Mm-hmm. Like, for most people doing BDSM, like, the roles end. Like, you do a scene, it happens, and then things go back to normal, and like there's aftercare and like discussions, and like you aren't that thing constantly.
It's a part of how you want to experience each other. It's not your be all end all identity.
Exactly.
And
it's not taken necessarily seriously all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like people like on the outside see BDSM as this super serious, super like hardcore thing, and it doesn't have to be that.
It's about the two people who are involved. It's exactly. Not this monolith of like a big scary muscly man in his like ripped Christian Grey sex jeans like hitting a beautiful skinny woman with a riding crop. Like, that's not what it is.
I think in fan fiction too, and Emily, as you've said, the back button is your safe word.
Yes.
Whereas when you have purchased a novel, you've invested money in this. Mm-hmm. Like, you've spent time to go to the library. Like, there's more writing on it. There's some kind of resources that you have built up in this, because it's in a resource economy. Like, you've had to trade something for this experience. Where in fan communities, shit's free. And if you don't like it, you haven't lost anything
but 5 minutes.
Yeah, and you can say, hey, I'm interested in this BDM thing. What am I going to do? I'm going to click on the BDSM tag. I'm going to look through some other summaries.
Yeah.
And I'm going to find other things that interest me.
I would also say that a big part of the difference between a fan fiction and its effect on you and how you perceive it and a mainstream media's thing and how you perceive it and how it affects you is it's not just you that spent money and time on this thing. It's a major corporation. It's a there are other people who have basically said, we have vetted this and we have spent our time and money producing it. So it has, it is an implication of some kind of stamp of approval from a pretty large group of people.
Where very often they don't do any research whatsoever. No,
or all they think is, this could make me money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but, you know, if you're someone who's never seen BDSM before and you read, like, you know, I don't even remember who published it, but, like, I don't know, Penguin Random House. Like, oh, Penguin Random House published this novel that includes BDSM. Obviously, they thought it was appropriate and worth it for their brand and their company to spend money and time on this. Therefore, it has some validity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or like the whole, what's the word I'm looking for? When you, like, portray something, I guess portrayal. The portrayal of sex workers. Oh, within media and within fan fiction, because I feel like there are a lot of stripper AUs or BDSM AUs.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that's a thing that I still want to find is a, like, fan fiction or regular content where it's like, I'm a sex worker. This is not a shameful thing. I can still have healthy relationships and continue my career without somebody feeling like, oh, I have to be saved from sex work.
Yeah, the Pretty Woman AU.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and Pretty Woman gets to be the name of an AU topic because it is, like, it's a piece of media. It's not a piece of fan content. Pretty Woman's a piece of media, and we've named the trope after that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's different levels of validity that media get to claim over fan fiction, and fan fiction has created its own AU tropes. I mean, ABO is a great example of that. Like, that's its own thing now.
It is.
That came from a lot of different places, Lord, and really grew in fan fiction.
You know what?
But
fucking God bless ABO.
Honestly,
what a beautiful expression of how a community can create its own lore and content and worlds. Like, whether or not it squicks you all to hell or whether you think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, the fact that a online free fan community has created something that complex that, like, people who've never met can explore with each other and can discuss with each other. And there's people who I've never met who I could say, like, oh, what, how do you feel about ABO? And they'll have very specific opinions, yeah, on it. Like, and it had nothing to do with any corporate or media conglomerate money. Like, that's fucking awesome.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yes, it's got some toxic weird shit in it, but just like anything else that's fanon instead of canon, I've heard it said that fan fiction is like the modern equivalent of, like, communal oral storytelling.
Yes.
And it's that. It's like, that's your, you know, that's your community's legend of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and
that's really cool.
I love that ABO too now has almost become its own canon. Like,
oh,
it has.
100% yeah, has.
It has its own stock things, where you've got the alpha, you've got the omega, you've got a general sense of what a beta might be.
It's got its
you've
own got, tropes.
Yeah, it does. You've got nodding. I had to say it. Come on. And then I love
my
the
mother
idea.
Can never listen to this.
That's true. I love that it's become now something that needs to be subverted itself. I love it. I love, yeah, it when fan content can become something so entrenched that it then has to experience a subversion that it was created to do itself. I love that little Ouroboros of weird.
Oh, yeah. No, it's
Ouroboros of weird. That is our new,
that's
the
new slogan.
Yeah, when I first started hearing about ABO, I was like, man, fuck that. Because I tend to really hate that sort of rigid... Ooh, sorry. I just hit something, and I apologize that everyone had to hear that, and then hear me apologize for it.
Crunchity crunchity.
Well, yeah,
But I used to hate the semi-uke dynamics, the dom-sub dynamics.
Biological determinism.
Biological determinism.
Yes.
Yeah, as a trans person, I hate biological determinism.
I think basically the reason that I dislike... Like, I'm not against hearing stories about, like, people in heat or, like, sex pollen or stuff like that.
Oh, yeah,
I
love
think the
that.
Thing that
God
I,
bless sex pollen.
That I dislike
what a
about...
a great horror story.
I think the thing that I dislike about ABO is, again, the strict guideline of, oh, you have to be with this person, you have to be with that person.
Yeah.
And then, like, it all being about, like, making babies. at the end of the day.
I do hate the making babies part, but the reason that I got interested in ABO as a concept was because you can subvert it. And I was like, what happens if two alphas fall for each other? What happens in relationships that are not about baby making? Because mm-hmm. that's how I feel about sex in real life, too. There was such a strong emphasis when I was growing up on sex for procreation. And, like, to be fair, yeah, sex is pretty important for procreation, to be fair, to sex. But that's not something I've ever wanted to use sex for. So I've actually sort of found it really great in ABO when it's like, all right, how do we get around this? And then, like, the horror stories that happen when you can't escape it, because they are kind of horrifying in ABO, let's be real.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's absolutely, like, a bodily autonomy theme there.
Although, to be fair, I also know people who will read ABO for, like, pregnancy positive stuff, and I am not somebody to talk to about pregnancy in a positive context. It's just not going to exist. I'd love to have somebody on the podcast who could talk about pregnancy in a positive context, although I'd probably have to wear earplugs.
You guys can do it on a day when you're not here.
Right. I'll just not be in that one.
It's going to be a guest co-host.
Yeah, but that's. I was really interested in the ideas of, like, how do you subvert this? And I found really, like, I love, like, Toppy Omegas became something that I was kind of like, what the fuck? Or, like, betas. Like, the people...
Lil Graham. Sorry, what?
Lil Graham, yeah. Or, like, people who are just so ignored by the system. Like, the beta concept became really interesting to me, too. Like, what do you do if you're just a normal person surrounded by this shit? Like, I started becoming interested in those questions of where to poke holes in the canon of ABO, which is a wild thing to say.
That is... Yeah, no, that's how many layers deep this stuff runs. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's ABO... is like any other speculative fiction where it's about using those rules and that world to ask a question about the reality we live in now or explore something. So just like with sci-fi, it can be done very poorly and just like be about a robot and like, oh, how cool is a robot? Or like, how sexy is it that like this guy, look at his butt, like look at his self-lubricating butt.
Oh God.
No, God, I know. Right. But if you're treating it like it's any other kind of speculative fiction where the world building is in service of theme and of subversion and of asking questions about like, what does it mean to feel like you're not in control of your body? Like, as a woman who has a womb who could become pregnant at any time, like that is a fear and and something that like I have to contend with in my own relationship to my body is like there is a part of me that frankly I don't really control. It bleeds every month and mm-hmm. and if someone was determined enough, they could put a baby in me. And like that's scary and weird and complicated and sometimes can be beautiful and sometimes is the fucking worst thing. And there is a nice thing about those, like, for I know we're just talking about ABO now, but like watching that happen to a character that I connect with or that I enjoy reading about, and that person, especially if they're a man who doesn't usually have to contend with this kind of stuff, like a cis man who doesn't usually have to contend with this, mm-hmm. watching them deal with those same fears and discomforts and complications that I have in my relationship with my body, like, that's very satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that fuels a lot of ABO. Actually, one fic that I really like that does a really good job of this subversion of the tropes is called Suppress That Shit by Appalachian Fireflies. And
writing this down.
Yes, it is. It's in the Cap fandom. It's a Stucky fic.
Of course it is.
But, and it talks about, I think, the Steve character had been addicted to heat suppressants. Yeah, because he was...
Is this just our ABO episode now?
Whoops.
No.
We need an ABO segment now.
I'm vetoing this.
So heat suppressants are a thing in this universe.
I hate it. Thanks, I hate it.
Listen, Spock would have taken those if he could.
Thanks, I hate this. I completely hate this.
Oh, yeah, man, it is just Ponfar. Yeah, look at it. It's Ponfar with baby making.
Well, and an excuse for M-Preg.
Baby making in Ponfar as well, unless you're Spock. In which case, you're just going to choke out the guy you're in love with.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You know what?
We're doing
good for us.
Yeah, good for us.
Just in general.
Anyway, so Steve is in, you're going to like this part. So he's trying to get over this addiction. So he's in rehab, and the therapist at the rehab center is Bucky, who is a professional sex worker who helps people get through like complex issues around their like
a sex therapist.
Yeah, he's a sex therapist and a sex worker like together. And so he's there to help help Steve through as he's getting through his withdrawal and as he's getting through his first heat. And then after a long time, like it's great. It's basically, it's like porn with emotions.
Yeah. You're going to send that to me.
You betcha. It's a really good fic. Yeah, I think it's the one I've been falling into like a tunnel of ABO for weeks when I found this fic. And I was, you know, like when you're just,
I didn't know that we had this in common.
You know, it's just not something you talk about.
It's not. It's a shameful secret.
It's fandom's shameful secret.
I did read a Stucky fic about salami that I think I shared with you once.
Oh, yeah, I've read the salami fic.
What?
TLDR, Bucky gets like a foot-long salami stuck in his butt, has to go to the hospital, and Steve is his nurse while he's getting it out.
Okay, so going back to the original question at the top of this episode, if I may, which is like, what does fanfic and fandom provide you that mainstream media cannot? And I think it can really be summed up with a sex-positive, caring bit of fiction in which a genetically enhanced cyborg super soldier gets a salami up his butt and another genetically enhanced super soldier.
Oh, this was a human AU, by the way.
Who represents the soul of an ideal America that doesn't actually exist.
Reasons I have a problem with Captain America as a...
Okay, well, Captain America is gay, but we'll have to do a whole...
That's why I say the soul of an ideal America that doesn't actually exist and has never existed and is very gay helps him take the salami out of his butt.
And then they get together.
Yeah. Great. I'm sorry, was that not a given? That's like a given.
This has been a time and a place...
I might end the episode right there. And then fade out to some music.
If you have any questions, comments, concerns, if you have any ABO fics to give Emily.
Yeah, maybe send those my way.
Or if you have any really good subversive ABO that I should send to Raina.
Let's get Raina on board this train.
Yes.
This ABO train.
If you have any healthy polyamory fics, I would like some of those because they're very few and far between.
If you have any emotional horror romance fics.
If you have good depictions of sex workers where they aren't sex shamed, I want them because I don't see any of them.
If you have your most obscure pairing that you're obsessed with and no one else is obsessed with and you just need someone to like... tell why they're the most perfect pairing in the whole world. I love that. So please tell me about your like obscure upon obscure moments.
Yes.
Yes. And
you can reach us at
defendyourship at Twitter.
And defendyourship@gmail.com.
Yes.
And they'll pass any weird things along to me, I think.
Oh, we for sure will. Yeah.
Hell yeah. You can find me on Twitter, Emmy Blake.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to plug?
No.
Okay.
No, this is the coolest thing I've done in a while, so let's just keep it that way.
Good, then you can plug us, because we need that.
I think this is the new litmus test for anyone I date. Is listening to this.
I've decided right here and now, this is our Christmas episode.
No.
Merry Christmas, everyone. We could all sing White Christmas now, except for Raina.
I will say also, there's something about me that, because I'm a trash person, really wants this to not be a holiday episode, but a Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Because, like,
oh, yeah,
deal
you
with
know what?
That.
Yeah, that's
well,
a, yeah.
Well.
I just meant it was going to come out the week of Christmas, literally.
As the dissenting Jew.
I mean, I'm half Jewish.
We'll do some, we can do something for Hanukkah.
No, this is a holiday gift to me, which is that I, as an adult person, got to spend an hour talking about why you should watch the fifth Twilight movie. And self-lubricating butts.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. God bless us.
God bless us. Please.
Oh, who's well, your Scrooge ship?
What?
Yeah, who you ship Scrooge with? Which ghost?
Spectacular. Hey, speaking of things you would want to use to vet somebody you're going to date, do you think that Scrooge and the Ghost of Christmas Future could be in, like, a BDSM situation?
I hate this so much.
And a bonus.
I hate it.
Wait.
You know, the vacuous hole that represents his face because he always wears that robe.
Oh,
and
no.
You don't see his
don't,
face.
Don't finish the sentence. Don't do it. Like, oh, no. Do they? Are you saying that...
robe fucking in some
case. Eldritch horror robe fucking?
I'm yeah. dead. I'm done. I am deceased. I am gone from this world.
This sounds like that's their kink.